Have you ever wondered why you make particular decisions? For example, what were you thinking when you skied out of bounds at Snoqualmie Pass? Why'd you choose to wear that pair of spike heels to work instead of more comfortable shoes? A classic observer of human behavior might tell you that all of our decisions have a rational basis, but new research indicates that rational may not be based on conscious factors. Instead, it's more deeply hardwired into our DNA. Vladas Grichkovic is co-author of a new book called The Rational Animal, How Evolution Made Us Smarter Than We Think. He joins me now from St. Paul, Minnesota, where he's professor of marketing and psychology at the University of Minnesota. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And I know I butchered your name. Sorry about that. I'll do my best to pronounce it right on the way out.
You can just call me Vlad.
Vlad, what when we talk about classical view of human decision making, what do we mean by that?
Well, for a long time, it has been assumed that people are entirely rational, that we're like little Excel spreadsheets calculating the benefits and costs of every decision and then making a rational choice. And what we've been learning in the last 10, 20 years is that's not exactly how we work.
Well, how does how we work tie into evolutionary biology?
Well, what we make are what looks like a lot of irrational decisions where our minds are riddled with all these different biases. For instance, people are overly optimistic and overconfident about themselves. If you ask about how good of a driver you are, 93% of people say that they're better than average, even if you ask them after they've been in a car accident. And it looks like we have all these irrational biases. But what I do in the book and what I do in my research is take a look at all these biases from a different perspective, the same way that Charles Darwin would have done it, which is to say, might they serve some adaptive function? And often you find that they do. They are quite adaptive in all parts of life.
Well, you start the book off talking about the Kennedy clan. And what you're doing is talking about them and risky behaviors. So how does, for example, dying in a plane crash, choosing to fly a light plane or to take one more bombing mission, how does that have to do anything to do with my genetic makeup and my ancestry?
Well, if you think about something like risky decisions, so risky decisions are inherently risky. And if you take a clan like the Kennedy clan, on the one hand, taking risks is certainly going to lead to some very bad outcomes. Once in every while, people even die. Some of the Kennedys died. But lots of the Kennedys didn't die. And in fact, lots of them who also took risks ended up being quite wealthy, certainly married and had lots of children. From an evolutionary perspective, there's been tons of grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So risk comes with adaptive benefits, even though sometimes it ends very tragically.
So sometimes are you saying that risk makes us sexier to potential mates?
Well, risk, think about what it takes to be successful in life, where to be in a good position, have a good job, have a good career, takes taking certain kinds of social risks. And it's those kinds of ambitions, those kinds of risks that other people often find attractive. And we are attracted to risk takers, especially to those who are intelligent and competent and can achieve something with that risk taking.
And if they're attracted to us because we take risks, we're more likely to procreate with them, or there's a possibility that we might pass on our gene pool.
Well, it takes taking a risk to get a payoff. And this is a classic example in the largest scheme of things where that's true.
I'm talking with Vlad Grichkovic, who's a professor at the University of Minnesota. You and your co-author, Douglas Kenrick, describe seven personae that each of us carries around with us. First of all, can you describe them and then talk a little bit about how they manifest themselves in decision making?
Yeah, when you take an evolutionary perspective of why we do the things they do, it turns out that our behavior serves several different functions, and they've served the same functions for our ancestors as they do today, where some of our behaviors are intended to make us safe, others protect us from disease, others affiliate with friends, still others help us climb the status hierarchy or attract mates or take care of family. So these are different evolutionary goals that all people have.
Do we shuffle them consciously when we're making decisions?
Well, that's a very good question, where that's one of the novel things about this research area, is that people change who they are depending on which goal they're currently pursuing. So if I walk into a situation and there's an attractive opposite sex person in that room, my preferences are actually going to change in that situation because my goal has shifted in that situation. My goal is now to attract that mate.
What was interesting to me was there's a chapter where you talk about the Disney Corporation at its founding and as it sort of passed through time into what it is right now. And what you were talking about was the difference between how we relate to family or pseudo-family and a more stranger or formal relationship when both the interaction is taking place and how we conduct business.
That's right. So you can think about us conducting business. If we're dealing with strangers, we're going to deal with them one way. If we're dealing with family, we're going to do business with them another way. And what's interesting here is the world of economics. So I work at a business school. I teach business students. They presume that a lot of the decisions, almost all the decisions that we make, are like the decisions between strangers, where we're always trying to extract the most money from every given situation and kind of leave the other person for the worse. But that's not quite true. A lot of our psychology is based on interacting with family, interacting with friends. And the last thing we often want to do is get the most benefits from that other person and leave them hanging.
And I'm glad you brought up that you teach in a business school. You teach marketing at a business school. And it seems like this sort of theory that you've been working on would be antithetical to a traditional education or a traditional business education in any case.
Well, a little bit. Well, what marketers are interested is why people do the things they do, because by understanding the underlying reasons, sometimes the subconscious reasons of why people do the things they do, enables marketers to be better at persuading people to take certain courses of action.
So to put on a very cynical hat, you're going to find out all this great psychology and behavioral research, and you're going to use it to sell me more things?
Well, I'm going to educate people about why they do the things they do. And if you're a consumer, you could take this information and protect yourself against essentially parasites who are trying to exploit your evolutionary tendencies. But if you're a marketer, you might use this information for a different purpose. You might use this information to exploit others.
Vlad Griskovich is a professor of marketing and psychology at the University of Minnesota. How widely accepted is your this train of theory that you and your co-author are moving on? Because for many decades, that's not been the underlying assumption at a business school.
Well, one thing that you see on all university campuses is university campuses have been scientifically segregated, where you have the social sciences over here, the humanities over there, and the natural sciences somewhere else. And each field has been very insulated to each other. And what you see happening now is you see much more communication between different areas. So all we're doing here is we're studying human animals in the same way that every single other animal on the planet is studying, which is to look at puzzling behavior, to look at why would this individual do that, and ask, might there be some adaptive function? So this is really a natural fit between the natural sciences and the social sciences and learning more about human behavior.
So when researchers 2 decades ago talked about rational behaviors, I'm thinking of the Fed Chair Greenspan talking about irrational exuberance, that use of that word rational in the economic sense, that what you're saying is that rational is as rational does, that we're defined by subconscious and perhaps irrational things, or at least irrational to our conscious minds?
Yeah, what's interesting about the word rational is that it's essentially been co-opted by economists. It used to be a much more philosophical
word.
But in the 100 years, economists have co-opted it, where they have defined what rational means. And rational means accurate, and rational means almost always getting the most money for what you have. If you look at experiments, as the rational person is the one who maximizes his or her wealth. But from an evolutionary perspective, this is a bit bizarre because organisms, humans, other animals, are not designed to maximize money. They're designed to behave in ways that are adaptive. And sometimes that might mean getting the most money, but oftentimes it doesn't. Oftentimes it means making decisions that have the types of decisions that have enhanced our ancestors' fitness, but not necessarily economically rational decisions.
One of the instances that you point out about that is the British author, the creator of the Harry Potter series, J.K. Rowling, who gave away a vast portion of her wealth, probably most of it, if I'm not mistaken.
And that's right. She once wrote a check for $15 million. That's a lot of zeros on one check.
Well, there are also some rich men here in the Seattle area, Bill Gates and at the Gates Foundation, and Warren Buffett, who donated most of his money to the Gates Foundation. They've been appealing to their fellow billionaires, of whom I don't think there's a huge amount, to leave most of their wealth to organizations like the Gates Foundation, to charities, to the poor, to causes rather than to their heirs. Do you think that your theories can explain that kind of behavior?
Well, let's ask, what is going on with all these billionaires trying to give away their money? Are they being purely altruistic?
Yeah.
From an evolutionary perspective, that's unlikely the case. We have not evolved to help others because we're purely altruistic. It has some benefit. It has to have had some benefit for our ancestors in order for it to pass down. So if you look at what's happening, what I see going on is how do people compete with each other? It used to be you can build the largest golf course in the desert and water it all the time and to engage in all kinds of conspicuous consumption and be really wasteful and compete with others. Well, today you have many more different avenues for competition. You can give away the most money. Now, on the one hand, that's a bit cynical to say that all these people are just competing with each other, giving away the most money. But it's actually a very beneficial way of competition, because not only do they benefit by getting higher status in the eyes of others, but the rest of society often benefits as well from all these great donations.
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking as you were describing that perhaps now that geeks are cool, or at least geeks are cool in the Seattle area, that billionaires who give away their money have higher status than those who are going to spend $500,000 on a snappy car.
That's exactly right. You don't want to spend it on a $5,000 golden Lamborghini anymore. Instead, you want to donate that same money to some cause. And it ultimately, from an evolutionary perspective, achieves the same exact thing, which is it increases your status in the eyes of others.
Sounds good. Vladas Griskovic is a professor of marketing and psychology at the University of Minnesota School of Business. His new book, co-written with Douglas Kenrick, is called The Rational Animal, How Evolution Made Us Smarter Than We Think. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.